Welcome to the Revitalize Women podcast with Dr. Brenda Heineke, where we bring health and wellness professionals together to talk about all aspects of women's health, from pregnancy to menopause and everything in between. Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Revitalize Woman podcast. If you've been enjoying this podcast, I would encourage you to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or any other platform you're using to listen to this to let us know. I would really appreciate it. On today's episode, I got to sit down with Krista Reamer, who is a mother, runner, and one of my favorite clients to work with. This episode is a little bit different because you will get to hear her story about her struggles and hesitations, as well as what pelvic floor physical therapy has done for her. So this is so inspiring to listen to. And if you are in need of an uplifting story, today's episode is for you. And a quick sneak peek before we dive into today's episode, we are getting ready to launch our brand new female athlete membership site this summer. If you want to be strong and active, regardless of your athletic level, this is for you. Members will get exercise plans delivered to them that are designed to help them strengthen, avoid injuries, and also learn how to incorporate the pelvic floor with their core muscles in order to have the best outcomes. You'll also have access to a resource library, private Facebook group with regular webinars, and a community of other like-minded women. We'll be releasing more information shortly, so stay tuned on our social media to learn more. I am so excited and I can't wait to share it with you. Now, let's jump into the episode with Krista. Today, I have Krista Reamer, who is one of my dear clients that I have been treating with pelvic floor physical therapy for quite a while now, after the birth of her son. So Krista is on the show today to kind of talk about her experience and give you a little more insight into the world of pelvic floor PT from her perspective. So if you are wondering what that all entails and, you know, kind of hearing a little bit more of her story, then this episode is for you. So thank you so much today for coming, Krista.
I am happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm super excited to have you on and kind of hear everything you have to say.
I'm happy to be here and able to leave my clothes on and have no exam today.
Plus.
Yes, bonus points.
It's a change for a Monday, right? So why don't you give the listeners some backstory? Why did you kind of seek out help from me and, you know, what kind of issues were you having?
So I was a latecomer to PT. I am a runner. I've been running forever. I ran through most of my pregnancy. But after Owen was born, there was lots of leaking. Every time I ran, it was a little bit like peeing my pants, which, you know, I'd spent my entire pregnancy hearing that this is your life now. Like, you can never jump on a trampoline again and just wear a pad. And, you know, they kind of ingrain in your brain that that's just life after having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of accept it.
Right.
And a handful of people had said, oh, try pelvic floor physical therapy. It works wonders. And in my mind, physical therapy was always, while it's very valid, I thought I would come and we would talk about my issues and I would learn exercises that would help, which, again, all valid and important things, but knowing myself, I knew that I would be bad at consistently doing the exercises and I can just sit at home and do Kegels and it's fine. And so I didn't want to invest in it because, you know, between the cost and the time, I'm like, well, I don't need to do exercises right now. I know I won't do them enough. I'm just, this is my life now.
Yeah. And why come in and see someone if, like, you could just sit and do Kegels at home kind of thing?
Right. Because that's all I thought pelvic floor PT was we're going to do some Kegels, we're going to do some exercises. So I put it off for months and months. But I remember I was on a run one day and it was just ridiculous. I mean, by the time I got home, it was essentially like I had peed my pants. And I thought, you know what, this is ridiculous. And I had heard of Revitalize actually the night I went into labor, I was supposed to come. I was pregnant, obviously. And a friend of mine had recommended I come to this. It was a class that you were hosting for pregnant mothers. I think it was about pelvic floor stuff. And she said, you should come. They're great. And so I had planned to come that night to a class for pregnant women. And then my water broke and that was the end of that.
And then you ended up in the hospital instead.
Yeah. And then I had a baby 4 weeks early and all kinds of good stuff. But so I reached back out to her and she's also a client and she recommended Revitalize. And because I was familiar already from wanting to go to the class before and kind of stalking on Facebook and the website, I made my first appointment. And here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we were just talking about this, that Owen was probably like 9 months.
Yeah.
At the time, I think we were trying to figure out.
He was, yeah, almost 9 months old. So, I mean, I had spent 9 months. And now my labor was, you know, I tore. As one does sometimes, unfortunately. I tore and I had an episiotomy and it tore my cervix. So I had all kinds of good stuff going on down there that left a lot of
scar tissue.
Some damage, turns out. So I spent 9 months just dealing with that. And again, everyone says, oh, that's normal. Ha ha. Yeah, that's just your life. And that, I mean, that really, you believe that. You really do.
Yeah, I feel like everything you read and everything mm-hmm. people tell you is just, oh, peeing your pants is normal. And yes. How many things do we see that like make light of that, that this is a normal part of motherhood, kind of like a badge of honor that you're going to pee your pants. And
yes. And as a runner, I know a lot of running moms and it's the same thing. They're like, oh, yeah, that's been me forever. That's just the way it is. And so I just accepted that I am going to pee myself forever.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's something I always talk about, and I always tell people it's common, but not normal. And I think that just has to really spread the awareness.
Literally. I agree. And this is probably going down a totally different road, but I feel like this is also something that should be taught and explained during pregnancy. I think when women go to their OB, we should be told what is normal and what's not. And I will argue this forever, and I think anyone will, any woman, that pelvic floor PT should just be an automatic part of your postpartum. Like you get discharged and you get a referral and you go. Instead, you know, 6 weeks later we come in and get our stuff scoped out and get sent on our way.
Yeah.
And no one tells us go directly to the PT, you know, pelvic floor therapy and get your stuff figured out.
Yeah.
We're just sort of left to flounder. And then us women among ourselves say, hey, go.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah.
Be free.
You have that one good friend that tells you like.
Yes. And so now I have become that friend for all of my. Well, and the thing is since I've started coming, I have friends whose kids are like 8, 9 years old. And they're like, well, can I still go? And apparently, yes, you can. And I have sent so many friends off in their respective worlds to go deal with their pelvis issues.
Yeah, it's never too late to address it. It's interesting because there's even so much that we can do during pregnancy. And so that's kind of one of the big things that we're working on here is trying to really make it a normal part of like your prenatal care.
Yes, pre and post.
Right.
Like all of it should be.
Yeah. And there's even a lot of stuff now coming out with PTs and their support during like labor or immediately after delivery. And there's some PTs that actually go into the hospital and see a new mom like right away that first day to kind of like get things going and, you know, really try to educate so that sets them off on the right foot. And I think that is like such a great idea and so needed.
That'd be so valuable. I think the biggest thing that could have made a difference for me is having that a part of my prenatal care. Had I known, well, first of all, I assume that it was just something that happens afterwards. Had I been educated from my OB or from anyone, get this, you know, come while you're pregnant. Let's get things started right away. I mean, I feel like that would have been incredibly valuable.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it comes down to just a lack of education and communication within healthcare providers, because there's kind of a disconnect. I don't think that a lot of the OBs and the midwives truly understand the full scope of pelvic floor PT. You know, a lot of them still think of PT as this very traditional, just exercise-based practice where all you're doing is exercises. And so they'll try to replicate that by maybe giving a sheet of exercises, but there's so much more. And I think they don't know, and they don't know what the benefits are that have been kind of backed up by research for that to be able to really recommend. Because I will say, I mean, the only time I get referrals from an OB or midwife really is when someone's having substantial limitations or issues. It's not really something that is just kind of like promoted as, hey, go do this to assess and make sure everything's good. And if there are issues, you know, then you have options. It's never put out like that.
Yeah, I think the one thing I got from my prenatal care team ever was I got like a sheet, and it said, it had like the recommendation of how many Kegels to do a day to strengthen and to prepare for labor and birth. And I was not prepared for my labor and birth, but yeah, that was it. It was never anything beyond that. No recommendations. No, it was just me talking to my other mom friends who were experiencing the same thing. And one of them, thankfully, had been in pelvic floor PT. The rest of them were like, well, this is our lives now.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever told you about our research study that we're starting here. So depending when you're listening to this, we may actually already be taking participants. But the whole purpose of this is our study, I want to like change what they're doing. So the recommendation is like, don't do any Kegels during pregnancy, because otherwise it makes all the muscles like
minds are blown.
Yeah. Overactive, and they're like too tight. And then we have all these issues and complications during delivery. So, but it's interesting you brought that up, because
interesting.
That's what everyone's told, is like, just do Kegels.
We're just told that Kegels will save our, I mean, Kegels are good for labor. Kegels are good for after labor. Kegels are good for sex. They're good for everything.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's not always. Me. Yeah. Yeah. If you're listening to this, check out our episode 1 on when to do Kegels and when not to. I kind of dive a lot more into that.
Should they be doing Kegels right now while driving in the car?
Oh my gosh. No, I was just reading a blog post about that last week that said, stop doing Kegels when you're sitting at a red light, because...
Really?
It was just making the argument that there's a lot more that goes into doing a Kegel with a different coordination, that if you're just doing it while you're driving, it's kind of like a mindless exercise that you're probably not truly focused on the right coordination.
You're right. I remember when I was taught here how to properly do a Kegel, I'm pretty sure I was always doing it, like the breathing part.
Yeah.
The breath and the this and the claw and all of it. There's a lot that goes into it. And it's much more than sitting at a stoplight and
just squeezing.
It's a coordinated effort. Yeah. It's like teamwork.
Right. Right. So I guess you touched on this a little bit, that initially you thought that, you know, pelvic floor PT was just going to be like, come in, get some exercises, and like, kind of send you on your way. What surprised you the most about pelvic floor PT?
The most surprising part was, I mean, it was a pelvic exam. I show up thinking we're going to do Kegels, I'm going to take some notes, I'm going to learn some exercises, but I ended up here with my pants off. And it wasn't, let me just say, it was fine. It is an exam, but it was so much more. It was so educational. So I get here and we talk, and then it's a lot like going to the OB, only much more comfortable, and it's less, you know.
There's no speculums.
There's no speculums. There's no tools. But it made me feel like I was actually, something was being done. Like they were, you know, it was an exam and we looked at all the damage that I had learned about. And I was educated, and I felt like something was actually being done. After everything was looked at, she was able to explain to me what she saw or felt and what was going on down there. And it was really just an educational process. You know, and I came every couple of weeks, every once a month for a while, and it became just a point. We would hang out and talk about Handmaid's Tale and all our favorite shows while breaking apart the scar tissue in my
lady biz.
In my lady parts. So it's, I don't know, but I remember being blown away after my first visit. I remember I came and I got a little welcome package. I got a little bib for Owen. And I just went home to tell Todd, because, you know, I told Todd. Todd's my husband. Bless his heart. He knew I was coming. But again, he was also sort of like, well, you're just going to go and he's going to learn exercises. And it's going to be expensive because, you know, insurance and healthcare and blah. But I came home just blown away by what I learned, what was done, that I had an exam, that they were able to start breaking apart some scar tissue right there at that first visit. And I felt like I left knowing so much more about what had happened and how my body functions or doesn't function than I learned in the entire 9 months of pregnancy and my entire 9 months of having a baby. It was shocking what I didn't know. And then I went home and told all my friends that go now and let them do their thing in your lady bits and it's going to be fine.
Yeah, almost like it kind of validates to some degree, yeah, like that, yes, there is an issue, because I feel like I hear that a lot from women that, you know, they know that maybe this isn't normal or they don't want to deal with this all the time. But because everyone's just like, oh, you know, welcome to motherhood, or mm-hmm, then it's like, oh, you're getting older now, that I think a lot of times in our heads, we've kind of chalked it up to be like, oh, it's not, you know, this isn't a big issue. Or like, it's kind of to some degree in my head that I'm making a problem out of this. And so,
yeah,
sometimes when you can actually lay everything out and say, you know, these are the issues, this is what's causing, mm-hmm, you know, leaking, it validates it.
It is very validating. So I remember going home and being like, yeah, see, I'm peeing and it's a problem and there's a reason for it. You know, right, I remember the first exam, they get in there and they feel around and right off the bat, oh, yeah, you've got some scar tissue here. I can really feel, you know, and just that moment right there, I was like, I knew there was a reason. I wasn't just peeing because this is my life now. There was, you know, and they explained that the scar tissue was tethering the muscle and the urethra. And I learned so much about my lady parts in that one visit. And then, I mean, I've been coming for over a year now. And I just feel so much more educated about what is happening and how to work on it.
Yeah. So to kind of give everyone a little bit of background, which I know Chris is okay with me sharing. So when I first started treating her, she had a lot of scar tissue from the tearing, the episiotomy, and all of that scar tissue kind of gets like jumbled up within the pelvic floor muscles, if you will. And so the muscles can't contract and function very well when they have scar tissue getting in the way. So that's something that we look for on everybody, because it's really difficult to really get that optimal function. You could be sitting there doing Kegels all day long, but it's only going to take you so far if, you know, you still have this scar tissue stuck there. The other thing with scar tissue is it can do some weird stuff with the nerves. So I've had patients in the past that was primarily their issue. For you, it wasn't primarily, but it was a factor where it kind of gets jumbled around the nerve, and then the nerve can't send those signals to the muscle as well either. And so again, your pelvic floor can't contract very well. And then the last piece of it was, because Krista had tearing higher up and more around like the urethra, basically the tube that connects the bladder to the outside, that is a fixed length, and mm-hmm, that scar tissue kind of holds it in place and it can't move and adjust for, you know, bouncing. Like when you're running, it has to be able to move up and down. And so a lot of times we have leaking that stems from that, or I see that a lot with C-sections, because that scar tissue gets right on the bladder then and does the same thing. So that's a big factor, especially with our runners, for sure. So trying to like break all that up is one of the first things that we have to do in order to even then try to restore that function on the muscles.
I want all of you that are listening in the car right now to feel very excited that you know so many intimate details about my privates. It's so interesting to me. But you, I didn't have a C-section. I delivered vaginally, but C-sections, I mean, this is something that affects them too,
yes.
Right? Which yeah. I think is interesting. I think a lot of people don't assume that either because, well, I had a C-section, I didn't deliver vaginally, so they can't help me.
Right. Yeah. But there's still a lot that goes on during pregnancy, a lot mm-hmm. of demand on the pelvic floor. And then, like I said, a lot of that scar tissue can do some weird stuff.
Now, I'm just going to – let's have an appointment right now. No. So my scar tissue – because, I mean, well, Owen just turned 2, but we still find a little bit of scar tissue in me, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, is that something that – does it, like – evolve or kind of like work its way out? Is it, you know, how does that, what does that mean? What happens?
Yeah. So a lot of times I tell people, once you break it up, it's going to stay broken up. Like you break up that section and it's essentially like dissolved. What happens is you have more than that comes to the surface. So you'll have, you know, these layers of scar tissue and you work superficially, you kind of go, you know, from the surface down. And so as you break it up, more and more kind of comes to surface. So sometimes that's why it takes several times to really get it. And depending how significant, yeah, you could still have some stuff kind of working its way to the surface or still restricting within like the connective tissue too.
So I was a big old hot mess. It's what we're saying.
Your words, not mine.
Is that the clinical definition of my private?
So I'm curious, when did you go back to running? Do you remember like at what point postpartum you returned?
I do. You know, I had my 6 week, well, let's rewind. I was bleeding for the entirety of my first 6 weeks, which again, I called my doctor. Well, you know, that can happen. Sometimes the bleeding can last a while. And then I went in on my 6 week check, and after first a cancer scare because there was a foreign object in my whatever place, it ended up that I actually had calcified placenta still in my uterus. And so I had essentially necrotic flesh just, you know, festering in there, and I was still bleeding because of that. So that kind of, I tried running at like 5 weeks and it was uncomfortable and I was bleeding. It was just a mess. So all of that was handled. And I think I started again officially and consistently at like 10 or 11 weeks, which was hard for me. I mean, I've been an avid runner forever, and all of my good girlfriends are also runners and they all had babies and they're running. I mean, they're 3 weeks postpartum and they're, which again, they are cleared by their doctors and whatnot. But I had a hard time waiting. I had a hard time, you know, I was 11 weeks and all my other friends were off and running with their babies by then. But I started at about 11 weeks and right off the bat, I mean, I remember within the first few steps, I'm just leaking and I'm like, okay, here we go. And that was 11 weeks postpartum and I didn't come to handle it until 9 months. So I ruined a lot of running shorts and tights.
I threw a lot of laundry detergent.
I did a lot of laundry. for 9 months while trying to sort that out. And I wasn't so much embarrassed. I mean, clearly I have no shame or filter and I'm on a podcast talking about my vagina, but it's hard. It's hard. It's frustrating. And I remember I was standing at a red light when I was in the middle of run and like, you could see it. My shorts were soaked. I could feel it. I'm getting chafed because my shorts are wet. And it's just, you feel like a mess because you are. And it was the one run where I was in the middle of a run and I could just feel it pouring. Like it was just coming out freely as if I was sitting on a toilet. And I was like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. I was curious because they just released a new guideline for returning to run postpartum. And because I feel like a lot of times people wait like 6 weeks or it sounds like not even, and then just jump back into it. And this new guideline basically says no running until 12 weeks. And only if you've done kind of this whole like exercise progression leading up to that. And it lays it out like very specifically with what you should do and at what point. And then it says if you have any symptoms of like pelvic floor dysfunction, like leaking or pain, that like you would stay, you know, stay at whatever level. So like
before increasing.
Right. Yeah. So you're like working through this progression. And so it's really interesting. And I read it and I'm like, wow, like 12 weeks, like from a PT standpoint, yes, that makes sense because you really need to address like the stabilization aspect and all this stuff before doing something really high level like running. But you think about it, and from like just a personal standpoint, you're like, wow, 12 weeks.
That's forever.
Yeah, it feels like forever, especially I had the same thing. I mean, when you're so used to being active or like exercise is kind of your stress reliever.
And you're holed up with a newborn day and night. You just are antsy to breathe.
Yeah. I remember feeling that so much with Toby where like, what do you do to feel a little bit like yourself in that postpartum period when like everything that you like to do, like you really can't do.
It's so hard.
So hard. And so that's why a lot of times people jump into it early on. And I know like I really held myself back because I knew like I tried to be like use that logical brain and be like, no, this is too early. But it's so hard and so challenging. You have to like find other things to like get that.
And I just sat like a miserable lump, honestly, that whole time for the 11 weeks I wasn't running. Because you know, Owen was born at the end of September. It was dark and it was fall. And that is a really dark time, those first 12 weeks. That first, you know, you have a newborn and you're not yourself. And I, as a runner, I couldn't run. And I did start back slow. I mean, I think my first run, I went a mile and then two miles. And for me, the muscle memory, I mean, the running came back quickly once I felt comfortable with it. But my body, I mean, your body is just so different then. And your pelvic floor is worthless if you're me. So it was, it's challenging. And now, you know, Owen's two, I've run a marathon again. And I've done a handful of half marathons already. And the running is back. And the pelvic floor is significantly much improved. But yeah, it's. You can't just, I couldn't just jump back in. And I wish that we knew that. I wish we were educated on that. Because you're right. I mean, you think of pregnancy, whether you have a C-section or whether you have a vaginal birth, your body just got obliterated. Mm-hmm. And to jump back into exercise is, I mean, if you think about it, yikes. Give it some time. And no, I mean, that's the thing. Like if we were told right out of delivery, leave the hospital, go to pelvic floor PT. I can't imagine the difference that would make for so many women.
Yeah. And I think it helps too. Like, I know I always try to do this, especially when I have a patient that is very active, very, you know, that's a really important part of their life. Like, giving them that progression almost, I think is really helpful because even if you are holding on running, so you're not just jumping back in at 6 weeks, you have things to do and progress and work your way through. So you can still feel to some degree like you're doing something or some resemblance of your old self almost. Yeah.
And I feel like I did it kind of backwards because I didn't know what to do with my pelvic floor. I spent 9 months just dealing with it and running. I mean, by the time I saw you, I'd already run a couple half marathons. I was back into like a running groove, but I hadn't done anything to care for my pelvic floor or the muscles or to get my body in shape, in not, you know, running shape, but in shape to function properly.
Yeah.
You know, so now I'm sort of backpedaling. I now, you know, I'm this far out and I'm still just now getting my pelvic floor where I probably should have gotten it 2 years ago, you know, when Owen was a newborn. And I'm glad that I've gone, but I can't imagine the difference it would have made had I done it all in the correct order.
Yeah.
You know, and put everything back together before jumping into running and just thinking, well, I'm just going to pee and I'm going to stack up on some Poise pee tampons or whatever they have out there, which don't do that.
Yeah. So where are you at now? Like, you know, we talked about you, where you were at before you started. We done pelvic floor PT for a while, and we've been kind of very spaced out now for quite a while. Like, I see you maybe once a month.
I think we're every 2 months now. And it's a world of difference. You know, it's one of those where now I will have the occasional like small leakage, and it's weird. It comes at weird times. And I know when I do come to see you, it's always like there's like a little spot in there of like some kind of tissue or my bladder or whatever it is you do to me that makes it all better. But I'm fine, essentially. I mean, if I, one day I was carrying my 50-pound dog through the backyard because she's a jerk, and I stumbled, and with the effort of holding a 50-pound dog and stumbling, you know, there was like a tiny bit of leakage, probably because I scared myself. But running is great. The leaking is rare, if not just the occasional kind of off situation. And I really don't even think about it anymore. It used to be, I used to head out for a run and I would have to think about what I was going to wear. I'm not going to wear these shorts because they're light colored, and when I pee myself, it's going to be obvious. I used to always wear black, and now I don't, which seems so dumb and little, but that was, I mean, 9 months of stressing over, especially if I were to go on a run on my lunch break at work, I'd be like, oh, I need to wear something to make sure when I walk back into the office, not everybody knows I peed myself out there.
Or I know you talked about like compression leggings would be so much better than if you wore like running shorts that were like looser.
If I was wearing like tights, like running tights or something, that seemed to help. If I were wearing shorts that just kind of flap in the breeze, that seemed to be more problematic.
Yeah.
I could tell more. And I don't know if it was because the compression was kind of holding everything in, which I appreciate. But now I don't have to think about what I wear. I don't. And that seems dumb, but it was huge. For 9 months, having that wear on your mind, when running used to be so natural, it's something that I do all the time, to have to stress about it and worry about it and think about it that much was kind of a pain.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What was the hardest part of doing PT or like going through PT?
You know, it's exactly what I thought it was going to be. And the reason it took me 9 months to come was I'm so bad. For how much I do run and I do that consistently, the exercises are still important. And I'll come and I'll get a set. Okay, work on these for the next month or however until my next visit. And I will spend like 2-3 days doing them consistently every morning and night. And my husband looks at me like I'm weird because I'm laying on the floor doing weird stuff with my legs. But I this fall off that wagon. I'm like, oh, it's fine. It's just like any other person that exercises. You know, I'm bad about stretching after a run. I'm bad about doing strength. I'm bad at doing those exercises consistently. And honestly, that's probably part of why I still have, you know, a handful of leaking here and there, because I'm not a very good, well-rounded patient. I, you know, Brenda takes care of my lady bits and all the gnarly scar tissue. And I need to be better at doing my part and making sure I'm doing the work to get the muscles doing what they need to do.
Yeah.
That's honestly the part that I'm a lazy person when it comes to that. It's my own fault.
It's hard to, like, get something new into, like, a routine, especially as, like, a new mom or when you have little kids. Like, it's just your time is so very limited and there's just so much going on that it's really challenging. I would say that definitely is probably the hardest part for most people. And I try to be cognizant of that and like find something that's going to fit better, because like I'll have people come in that maybe saw a different PT somewhere else and they're like, it's one of two things. They're either given like all of these sheets of exercises, like they have like 4 sheets of exercises, they come in and I'm like, well, no wonder why you're not doing them, because like this would take an hour every day. Like I wouldn't do that either. Or they'll be like, well, they told me to like do all these different things, but never really gave me like a handout and I don't really remember. And I'm like, well, yeah, like again, how do you expect someone to do something and remember it if like you don't give them anything to do?
Yeah, you're giving them 17 different exercises and not explain. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think we need to just be better on
I will too. Say, we need to understand, dear listeners, how lazy I am. I mean, I have maybe 2 exercises that I'm given. Like, work on these 2 things, and we work on them in the office, and I'm told explicitly how to do them. And I just don't, because I'm lazy. It's not like Brenda sending me home with 17, like an hour routine every day. It's literally do these 2 things like 3 times a week. I just am a terrible person and I don't do them. But and they're done. They are. When I do them, I can just lay on the floor while I'm watching Netflix, like I like to do. They are done in a way where you can just kind of throw them on. I'm making dinner or feeding Owen, and I'm working on my pelvic floor. So it is exercises, but it's like two of them, and I just am bad.
You're not alone. We're all guilty of it.
Yeah. But other than that, I mean, I did have a friend who I convinced her. She lives out in Colorado. I convinced her to go see a pelvic floor PT, and she's someone whose son is 8. And she was like, "Do you think it's going to help me?" And I'm like, "I'm told that it will, so give it a shot." And she was really, and I told her what I, you know, that there's an exam. They're going to break up some scar tissue probably. They're going to see what's going on. She was really, really nervous. And I remember her messaging me that day saying, "Oh my gosh, my appointment's this afternoon. I'm so anxious." And I think she is probably just someone that, I mean, who likes to go to the OB, for example? No one likes their lady bits. I mean, if you do, hey, do you. But it never bothered me. She ended up going and she was like, "Oh, that wasn't so bad." Like, and it's not. It's not like going to the doctor and having someone with a stethoscope in your privates. Yeah. That part has never bothered me. I think because I like to learn. I like to know what's going on. And it helped my brain so much to feel validated that I'm peeing for a reason. Yeah. And I shouldn't be.
Well, and I think, yes, that's the best way to assess is to assess internally. But we can work externally as well. So, like, if you are a person that like is really hesitant or like really uncomfortable with that, like, by all means, we don't have to. Sometimes I will address things elsewhere in the body.
Well, you've done that with me. You've done the like bladder situation.
Yeah. Some diaphragm stuff and things on the abdomen. There's a lot we can do externally as well. So, and sometimes that's a decision I make, like based on what I'm seeing a person for or how they are, how they react to that. Like, I might not do that the first time. It's kind of, you know, whatever the patient's comfortable with. And I think, yes, the first time is always like the most awkward, uncomfortable, because you don't know what to expect. And then from there, it like gets to be a little less of that.
It's funny because I sort of look at it like when I have my appointments, I'm like, oh, I get to go. It's like going to get a massage. Okay, it's not a massage, but it's, I don't know. Can I say that? Like, I enjoy my appointments because it's just, I don't know. It's almost like self-care. It's like I'm coming and I'm taking care of myself and getting everything. Like, we deserve our bodies to function, and we deserve this, you know, and I like it. I'm glad to be doing it. You know, I'm glad to be taking care of, because it's something, again, you know, with healthcare and insurance, it's tough. It's like an extra cost after just having a baby. Like, you don't want to think about more appointments and more bills and more of this, but man, it's important. And I'm so glad that I did it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is definitely hard, and it is, I mean, I totally get it too. Like, especially, you know, like when we see people during pregnancy, like, I mean, that is hard. I sympathize. Yeah. Or empathize, whatever the proper word is on that. Because, yeah, you're there. You're like, you have prenatal appointments like every week. And then, you know, which you're probably leaving work for or something because, like, there's never great appointment times. And it's just, it is really hard to make that time and prioritize, but so important and can help so much. But
also, here's a fun story. Last Christmas, I went with my husband and my stepdaughter and our son, and we went to go cut down a Christmas tree, a happy little day, and we ran into Brenda and her husband and little Toby. And I remember seeing her in the parking lot and running, "Oh my gosh, it's Brenda!" And I brought over my family, we introduced and said hi, and as we're leaving, Todd says, "Wait, who is that again?" And I was like, "Well, that's my pelvic floor PT." He's like, "But that woman there is your pelvic floor PT?" I'm like, "Yeah. She has seen more of your body than I think I have." And I'm like, "Yeah." And it was so, he was like mind blown that like oh, here's Dr. Brenda, and we're all buddies. And
yeah, that this you'd woman, actually, like, interact or something.
This woman has had more to do with my looty bits than he does. But, that's funny. That's just... The men don't understand at all.
They don't at all. Like, my husband, like, has no idea what I do. Like, if I even, like, try to start explaining what I do for work, he's just like, yeah, okay.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't need to know all this. Yeah. I'm like, well.
Yeah, he'll be like, what is she doing? And like, what? And I'm like, don't worry about it. This will all benefit you in the end someday.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're hard for them to wrap their brain around that, mm-hmm. but it's, I don't know. I always tell the story. I think I tell, like, a lot of my patients about the first time I went and got, like, pelvic floor certified and how, you know, it's the first time that you ever have to do any kind of internal treatment. And, you know, I had been a PT for a couple of years at this point. And so you're used to, you know, being not fully clothed, you know, when you go to continuing ed classes, like, you're always, like, shirts are off or pants are off or something, like, mm-hmm. to get to body parts. So, like, it doesn't, you're a little desensitized, but pelvic floor is like another ball game, and everyone knows what's coming. And so the first lab, like, we play therapist and patient. So mm-hmm. like, you know, and you just switch off and take turns. And so I just remember, like, the first time they're like, give you a sheet and they tell you to get undressed, like, take everything off and hop up on the table, and you're in a room with like 50 other PTs all on different mat tables. And then they're like, okay, well, just ditch the sheet now. Like, you guys need to get used to seeing vaginas. And everyone is like, what? You know, like, talk about nerve-wracking, because you're like, okay, this is, like, the most nerve-wracking thing I've ever done, and now, like, there goes your modesty.
Yeah,
like,
you're doing it with an audience and yeah. all your classmates. I mean, I can't imagine going to work and all of us just investigating each other's vaginas. You yeah. know, I think we'd get in trouble for that, which is why I'm not...
You don't work here. I'm revitalized. It's commonplace here.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, it is good though. I mean, you get comfortable with it, but to some degree, it's good because we know what our patients are going through because we've done yeah. it ourselves. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we're also a little desensitized to it to some degree because, like, every class you go to is like...
Well, it's almost kind of nice to have someone that's going to be investigating. I mean, it's like your OB. It's kind of nice that you are desensitized to it because it's so commonplace to you. So when we're sitting there and you're examining me and we're chatting about our kids and what we watched on TV last night, it's not awkward or uncomfortable because it's to you, you're just doing, it's just like me going to work and doing my job. Yeah. You just happen to be breaking scar tissue down in right. my private parts.
Been there.
So
yeah,
it is interesting.
So kind of wrapping things up, but what would be your biggest piece of advice to any, like, new mom out there?
Take care of yourself. This seems so like an advertisement, but go see a pelvic floor PT.
If she's not paid.
Can I though? Get paid? If you're having, here's another thing we didn't talk about. Close your ears if you're listening, mom. Sex too. I mean, my thing was running. It was the peeing while I was running. But I will say early on, and maybe because my privates were a hot mess from having a baby with a giant head, sex was uncomfortable. It felt uncomfortable. And I think that was a piece of it too, because it is no longer, and, you know, the leaking has changed. There's so many things that can be going on in your body after having a baby that you don't realize are tied back to your pelvic floor. So, you know, mm-hmm. if sex is uncomfortable or you're peeing while you're exercising, you don't just have to be a runner. I mean, you're peeing when you sneeze or when you carry your kid up the stairs. Go find out, at least just have an initial visit, because again, everyone is going to tell you this is your life now, but it isn't, and that's not fair. I would say at least just go one time and get everything looked at. Even, like we said, whether your kid is a newborn or 9 months or 10 years old, go.
Yeah, it's great advice.
That is my advice. Also, sleep when the baby sleeps. I still do that. And he's two.
No shame in that. So my last question for you is, what is your favorite current way of practicing self-care?
Oh, self-care. I would say, I mean, running is kind of the given, but that's just kind of my lifestyle as well. But I like to do the face thing. Like, I wash my face. I have all these serums and oils that I do before bed. And it started really small. It started with, you know what? I used to be really lazy about washing my face before bed. It started that small. And then it became, I got some recommendations on some products. And now it's this whole, like, 15-minute pre-bed routine. And it is a very simple thing. But, man, just spending 15 minutes to shut the bathroom door and, like, do something for myself to make myself feel good and make myself feel like myself is amazing. And I think that's the biggest thing, is finding any little thing that makes you feel like who you were before. Before mom, before wife, or whatever you are, find that little thing that can make you feel like who you are. I mean, it's helped me be a better mom, a better wife, just to, like, have little glimpses of, I am Krista and I am going to spend 15 minutes washing my face, or I'm going to paint my nails every Sunday night, or, you know, I'm going to sit in sweatpants for an entire day and watch Netflix until my eyes bleed. I don't get to do that so much anymore, but it's just, for me, it's just finding little ways to be just me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again for taking the time today and sharing, kind of opening up about your experience and sharing all of your details. But
so many.
I hope it really helps for those listening. And I hope it helps if you're kind of on the fence too. I hope it helps you, like, take that step to find someone to help you and get yourself back to some degree.
Yes. Do it. Don't be scared. It's worth it.
Well, thanks again and have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into my conversation today with Krista. Stay tuned for your pelvic floor tip of the day. But I just want to say a big thank you again to Krista for taking the time and sharing her experiences. I really appreciate it, and I hope that all of you listening also did the same. If you want to find any of the resources that we talked about in today's episode, head over to our show notes at revitalize-pt.com/EP18. Again, that is revitalize-pt.com/EP18. Today's pelvic floor tip of the day is, try to shorten your stride if you're having any leaking during running. If you're overstriding, this will create a trunk extension moment. It'll place the pelvis more into a posterior tilt, and ultimately, it makes it harder for the pelvic floor muscles to function. So if you're having any leaking, try to shorten that stride up and see what happens. All right, I'll see you again on another episode of the Revitalized Woman Podcast. Have a great day, everybody.